Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for coming. I know it's been a long day, so we really appreciate you coming to this panel. My job today is to very quickly give you a brief overview of food and agriculture and what is undoubtedly the most pressing environmental and public health issue of our time, and that is, of course, is climate change. So I'd like to start by asking you all to imagine what the Earth was like at the end of the last ice age. That was a world without agriculture. At that time, human beings depended on hunting and gathering for survival, and planting crops and raising animals for food had yet to develop. And then something happened that changed the course of human history. Temperatures almost everywhere began to rise. And according to archaeologists, it's that shift in warmer temperatures thousands of years ago that led to agriculture as we know it today. The corn and soybean fields that cover the American Midwest, the grazing fields that cover Australia and parts of New Zealand, and the rice fields of China would not exist today if that shift to warmer temperatures had not occurred. And today we are on the brink of another shift, one that again could drastically change food production in the world. Agriculture is both a driver of climate change and also impacted by the temperature increases, rainfall, and other climatic fluctuations that result from a changing climate. And although experts disagree on the exact amount, agriculture and its related land use changes contributes about one-third of total greenhouse gas emissions. And at the same time, agriculture is the human endeavor that will likely be the most affected by changes in climate, including rainfall, drought, and other variations. So today what I'll plan to do is, again, give a very brief overview of how agriculture affects climate change, how agriculture is affected by climate change, what are some potential mitigation strategies within food production, and finally, just a short list of priorities that public health advocates can recommend. So to my first question, how does agriculture contribute to climate change? According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, the three main causes of the observed changes in greenhouse gases over the last 250 years are fossil fuel use, land changes, and agriculture. And as I mentioned before, agriculture contributes about 30% of all greenhouse gas emissions. At every stage of food production, greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, the three most powerful greenhouse gases, are released. And carbon dioxide is released from a number of different agricultural practices. These include tilling the soil, which releases carbon because soils are considered carbon sinks, or places that sequester carbon. Other carbon sinks are destroyed for agriculture as well, including tropical rainforests and grassland savannas, particularly in places like Brazil and other parts of Latin America. Burning agricultural residue, such as corn stalks, also releases CO2. And operating farm machinery, packaging, processing, and transporting food products, of course, also releases CO2. Other agricultural endeavors, including biofuels production from food crops, also contributes to CO2, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Methane is the second most powerful greenhouse gas, and it's released from two major agricultural sources, including rice production and enteric fermentation in cattle. And nitrous oxide is released when fertilizer is applied to the land, both artificial sources of fertilizer and manure from animals. In 2006, a report by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization found that the global farm animal sector contributes more greenhouse gases, 18% in total, than the entire transportation sector, including cars, trucks, SUVs, and airplanes. Industrial farmed animal operations also require massive amounts of fossil fuels to run, and for heating and cooling facilities, and for processing animals and animal products. The FAO, in its report, Livestock Song Shadow, did not consider the transport of live animals in their calculations, but given that 44 million farmed animals are transported across borders each year, the carbon emissions from that are likely very significant. Another form of agriculture that contributes to greenhouse gas emissions is biofuels. And like any agricultural product, biofuels can be produced in environmentally sustainable or environmentally harmful ways. Of primary concern right now is the actual carbon footprint of biofuel production. A study published in Science earlier this year found that the energy and land use changes required to grow and produce biofuels from corn and soybeans and other feed crops creates more greenhouse gas emissions than those created by the use of fossil fuels. Researchers from the University of Minnesota have also found that converting rainforest, peatlands, and other grasslands to produce food-based biofuels in Brazil, Southeast Asia, and the United States creates a biofuel carbon debt by releasing 17 to 420 times more CO2 than the annual greenhouse gas emissions those biofuels displace by displaced from using fossil fuels. Now I'm just going to move on to talk about how agriculture will be affected by climate change. There are three main changes that will happen in agriculture as a result of climate change. One, there will be what is referred to as an intensification of the hydrological cycle, which means there will be more rainfall, more droughts, and more variable and extreme weather events such as hurricanes. Second, there will be more pests that affect both crops and animals alike. Longer growing seasons means that more pests will live, and warmer climates means warmer winters means not as many of those pests will die off. So we'll have longer generations of pests, and not as many of them will die off. And third, most experts who are looking at climate agree that poor people in the developing world will suffer the most from climate change. And these are people already plagued by malnutrition, disease, and hunger. So I'm just going to talk briefly about that third point first. The effects of climate change will not be distributed equally among countries, and it's likely that the countries most responsible for the most greenhouse gases from agriculture will not be the most affected. In India, for example, which is set to become the most populous nation, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change predicts that it could see a 40% decline in agricultural productivity by the 2080s, and that would be thanks to declines in wheat production as a result of heat waves. In Africa, where nearly all of the population makes their living from agriculture, yields could decline by 30%. In Latin America and the Caribbean, which have experienced growth in agriculture and decreased hunger over the last 30 years, could see reductions of yields of more than 20%, reversing those gains. It's likely that the most dramatic and disastrous changes in food production will be very subtle. And it's those small changes in weather patterns that will wreak the most havoc over time. Most plant breeds have a very limited threshold for changes in temperature. And as temperatures increase in some regions, yields will decline. Climate change will also likely affect plant diseases, increasing incidence of late potato blight, which caused the famine in Ireland, and wheat rust. And it's not just plant breeds that we have to worry about. The world's some 56 billion farmed animals will also be affected by increased temperatures, flooding, drought, and other extreme weather events. And this will dramatically affect the 2 billion people worldwide who depend on farm animals for part or all of their daily needs. I'm just going to move on quickly and skip some of my points. Now that I've probably depressed you with a lot of the impacts that climate change will cause and a lot of the problems, I do want to talk about briefly the rays of hope that we have. Earlier this year in May, the International Assessment of Agriculture Science and Technology for Development was released, and that's a really long name, but it's a really important report. It was funded by the World Bank, the FAO, the Global Environmental Facility, and a number of other international organizations, and many people in this room contributed to it. And it was a four-year-long project with over 400 scientists contributing. And the ISTAD report calls for an overhaul of industrial agriculture and emphasized the importance of locally based agroecological approaches to farming that do not rely on fossil fuel-based inputs. And these agroecological approaches include raising animals outdoors on pasture and using more organic agriculture methods. And despite claims from agribusiness that organic agriculture cannot feed the world, there's growing evidence that it can, including from the University of Michigan, the International Food Policy Research Institute, and the Rodale Institute, which have all done numerous studies, and some of them have found that organic agriculture yields can be as much as 50% more than those from industrial agriculture. In addition, organic farming has the potential to help farmers mitigate climate change because it depends on more diversity. Farmers can grow a range of crops rather than just on depending one that can be destroyed by drought or disease. Since I only have 3 minutes left, I'm going to focus on my conclusion. It's likely that the diet of consumers 30 years from now, particularly in the industrial world, will look very, very different than it does today. Consumers will begin seeing their diets as tools, just like changing light bulbs or driving less in the fight against climate change, and as a way to protect their own health. A few weeks ago, the food writer and New York Times contributor Michael Pollan published an open letter to the next president of the United States, calling for the chief executive to start looking at making better food policy in this country. He pointed out that until recently, presidents have not had to think much about food in this country or around the world, but thanks to obesity and other health challenges, rising food prices, and the impending threat of climate change, all of that is beginning to change. Among Mr. Pollan's suggestions was advocating for more local and regional-based food production and to eat lower on the food chain as a way to lower our dependence on fossil fuel and help curb global warming. And these are suggestions that the public health community can also recommend. We're already seeing public health advocates and medical professionals advise patients about eating better for both the planet and for personal health. A September 2007 article in The Lancet, for example, suggested that consumers in rich countries limit their meat consumption to 90 grams per day, which is a serving about the size of a single hamburger patty. And they advocated for this not only to control greenhouse gas emissions, but also to promote better human health. In addition to lowering greenhouse gas emissions, a reduction in the consumption of animal products can also decrease the incidence of cardiovascular disease, certain cancers, and obesity. And eating more local foods can limit the number of food miles that our food travels and help curb greenhouse gas emissions. Finally, I'd just like to end by saying that the failures of industrial agriculture have largely been unintentional, and that includes its contribution to greenhouse gas emissions. But that does not negate the hasty need for moving to more environmentally sustainable and healthier methods of food production. This is no longer just about climate change. This is about improving the quality of our health and the quality of our lives. Thank you.